Support comes from the Side Door Jazz Club at the historic Old Lyme Inn, presenting live jazz every weekend in an intimate listening room with a full bar and relaxed ambience. In addition to the jazz club, the Old Lyme Inn offers fine dining, overnight stays, and weekend getaways. Full calendar and ticket information at thesidedoorjazz.com or by phone at 860-434-0886.
Supported Radio WPKN in Bridgeport, Connecticut, 89.5 FM, 202 on a Tuesday. And that is a new album from Kristen Lee Sargent, who's going to be joining us in just a moment. She has a new album out, and we heard a tune off of that album called The Best. The Best. The Best is yet to come. And so Kristen joining us right now. Kristen, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, Lisa.
It's a pleasure. And thank you so much for joining our little radio station today. So congratulations on your new album. It's called Smolder. Downbeat seems to like it quite a bit. That must make you quite happy.
Yes, it's incredible.
So what was your thinking? I'm looking at your website right now, and there's like kind of smoke coming out of the website. Where were you? I mean, I know there's a theme here. What were you wanting to accomplish here?
I guess the word smolder, I think, is really interesting because it's evocative of fire that has maybe yet to ignite or that has just been extinguished. There's this feeling of if you see smoldering embers, something's maybe about to happen or something has ended. And I feel like that's very a rich terrain with which to deal with musically. And I just found once I had started cultivating the songs for this album that this theme of the element of fire kept recurring. So I just sort of ran with that.
Yeah, I love the theme idea, you know, and I think that on a side note, you know, so many albums are would be better appreciated if they weren't listened to, like, for example, on Spotify, because, you know, we're going to listen to one song and not the whole thing. And So I spent some time listening to every song before I interviewed you today, and it was just, like, spectacular because they go, like, one after the other. And, of course, Ted Nash, among the musicians that are with you, Ted Nash, who I am a huge fan of, and we just heard from a little earlier. He is a musician for Jazz at Lincoln Center, among other things. I'm sure he brought a lot to your gig.
Yes. You know, when I think of, you know, the smoky tendrils of what you were looking at on the website, I think his flute, especially on this album, weaves through it like smoke does and leaves kind of its own incense all over the tracks. You know, there's the, you know, my first record, I was just with a trio, and this one I have these, you know, interweaving flute and cello things happening. And Ted, what he brought to every song he's on, only he could bring. Just put it that way.
And so does that make it more complicated? I mean, I've heard, you know, vocalists say, you know, sometimes it's almost like there's too much going on and I can't concentrate on what I'm doing in terms of my vocal exercises, right? How do you feel about that? I mean, to have that kind of complexity, because it is a very complicated album.
Yeah. I think, you know, my work as an arranger has happened, you know, later than my training as a singer. So I started arranging with my first record, and this one definitely got more complicated. And I think there were moments where I thought, oh my God, what have I done to myself? When I realized I have to figure out how to arrange for cello and that kind of thing. One thing I love about jazz is that if you get the right cats, you can just, you know, kind of let them know the shape of what you're looking for and magic will happen. But in some cases here, I did have to actually be very explicit about what I wanted. I think as a singer, it's very freeing because unlike anything that I think an instrument could do better than the voice, I can give to the instrument. So that's why one of the reasons I don't really scat very much, because if I feel like there's something sonically that needs to be said without words, I can find an instrument to give it. But the short answer is it was much more complicated than I thought, and I look forward to getting more complicated in the future. And I think of those other instruments as voices, really, that I'm singing with.
Well, we look forward to that. So let me ask you, you didn't come to jazz directly, though, right? You started off in the classical arena, right?
Yeah, pretty much like anything in my life, I've taken the long road. So I started off performing in theater and musical theater. I trained operatically. When I moved to town, I then sort of fell down the slipstream of cabaret and then eventually fell in love with jazz. So I kind of got wonderful tools from all of those different modes of musical expression. And then I bring that to the party of jazz, I guess.
You know, it's interesting, all those things you said, because, you know, cabaret and theater and jazz have always been like cousins to each other, right? They're very close. I mean, and, you know, no Broadway theater and a lot of no jazz standards, right? That would have not happened. So, you know, let me ask you about your arranging, right? So you're on this album, you're taking mostly jazz standards and kind of reworking them. What were you thinking you wanted to accomplish there?
I was thinking, I guess I wasn't thinking too much. But I knew I needed to have cello in the album. Every song demanded something a little different, like Midnight Sun, anything that's a real a standard that we all know and love and probably have a few versions in our heads already of ones we love. I just felt that I had to have some dramatic pull to the song in a storytelling way. So that really is what dictates my arranging. You know, when I was an undergraduate at Brandeis, I did counterpoint exercises, and I didn't really learn very much because I didn't really understand why I was doing it, much like I wasn't very good at math because I didn't know why I was doing those equations. But once I got into the music for this record, it made sense that I wanted to create a certain effect with Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. I wanted to create kind of an atmosphere of there was some mystery or sadness or, you know, the smoke of a flame that has died. And using the instruments to tell that story, suddenly my work as an arranger makes sense because I'm being dramatic about it. That's part of what I love about Ted Nash's arranging, was that it was one of the first times I'd heard an arranger really tell a story in their arrangement rather than just, you know, filling out great voicings.
Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you that one of the things that draws me to your album is that storytelling part of it. And, you know, although I've enjoyed many, many vocalists and play many of them on my show, you know, it's, and I have Betty Carter, you know, queued up, who is one of my favorites. The ones that are just kind of singing, for some reason, that has never really moved me very much. And I don't know what that is, you know, about necessarily, or if that's even a right thing to feel or think, but it's just an inherent way that I've always experienced jazz. I'm always looking for something that I walk away from and I say, okay, well, I'm not the same as I was before I heard that. And I felt that way with your album. You know, there were a lot of these tunes where, like, wow, I would have never thought of doing that song that way.
Well, I can't think of a better compliment than that, so thank you for that. And I feel, it's funny, actually, that's something I remember a director said to me once eons ago in theater. He said, well, we have to be different at the end of the song than we were in the beginning. You know, we don't just, it's not just we sing the song and everything's the same. There has to be some sense of transformation or a journey that we've been on. And I think I feel the same way you do about singers. And I know that there's many ways to enjoy jazz, and there are different artists who have different ways of expressing themselves. But I feel the same, and I feel like as singers, we get the words. We have the story. Right. So it's kind of like, you know, not to delve into what the words can mean, both sonically, harmonically, and in terms of their meaning, in terms of language, is to kind of just, like, not play some of my instruments.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think that, you know, some of the music that I've enjoyed the most, you know, that's instrumental, I'm always looking for, like, okay, what's the title of the song? What were they possibly thinking there? And, you know, sometimes I've been very disappointed because, you know, I've like, researched it, and they're actually really, they came up with this title, they kind of threw it on there at the end. So, you know, I mean, it was like, oh, come on.
Right.
You know, give us a few crumbs so that we get the gist of it, you know.
Well, it makes it so much richer, for sure. And I feel that way about all the instrumentalists I feel passionately about, that there's this, you know, there's this sense of idea and conversation and fusing. I just started listening. I know that your listeners are probably like, where have I been? But I just was listening to a Wadada Leo Smith album.
Oh.
And, you know, that's free jazz. We're in a whole different realm. But it's the one with Bill Frisell. I forget the name of it.
Yeah,
there's this sense of conversation. There's all these ideas, and they're given air and space, and there's development. And that can happen in really disparate areas of the jazz universe, I think.
You know, that is really the space where you get into really loving and knowing jazz, because you have to know the jazz language in order to graduate to something like that. You know, and Andrew Sorrell has a new album out with Bill Frisell as well.
Oh, they're on that record with him. Okay,
yeah.
That's amazing.
And
yeah.
So what I was going to say was that I think, you know, there's like a jazz language, and you develop from like the most simplistic to the most advanced, and it just takes time to get there, you know. And, you know, unfortunately, jazz radio typically, you know, WPKN is definitely an exception there, but, you know, jazz radio doesn't go there very often. You're just not going to hear albums like that, you know, unless it's at midnight or two in the morning. So are you staying with us in the jazz world, or where are you headed?
Of course, yes. Well, I will say that your job is so important, and I think just thank you for what you do with this station, because I find that just like the way sometimes a song needs introduction, and when it's introduced the right way, or you're told, you know, if it's in another language, you're told what it means in your own language, or you're given some insight. You know, Wynton Marsalis is great at this with the Jazz Lincoln Center Orchestra, the way he frames a song with an introduction, and it brings so much more to what the listener can experience. So, like, you're the Virgil guiding us through and guiding the listeners through, so I love that. Yes, I'm staying in jazz, of course. I feel like even with the, I'm composing a lot more songs now, and I hope the next record will be mostly original, that the jazz language to me, the element of swing, the harmonic possibilities, you know, I'll be staying there, but I think it's inevitable I'll want to start to push some boundaries as well. So stay tuned.
So great. So where are you located?
I live in Manhattan in the Washington Heights.
Aha, because you have an area code that I didn't recognize, so that's why I asked.
Oh, 646. I think that's like my era's arrival in New York City. The 212s were all taken, so the 917.
You know,
646 is like the next generation, and the people younger than me are 347.
I see.
Who knows what's next?
and how are you enjoying Brooklyn? Brooklyn is a wonderful, wonderful place.
Oh, I'm in Washington Heights, Manhattan,
right.
And it's you know, it's really interesting. I moved after spending about 8 years in Midtown on 53rd and 11th,
mm-hmm.
and I had the tiniest apartment known to man. And then I moved up here, and it's much quieter. There's more space. It's really, I'm enjoying it a lot.
You know, I'm surprised. Like, so when you're describing more space, what does that exactly mean?
Well, I moved out of an apartment that was 110 square feet. So
that's fabulous.
Yeah.
That's really funny.
The line on that was you couldn't, once you opened the bed, you can't open the refrigerator.
I mean, how did you have enough room to compose? I mean, how did you get a pencil out?
You can fit a keyboard in there, and that's about it. I had to give up the dreams of entertaining in order to make sure that the piano had some room.
Yeah. Yeah, I love, you know, Washington Heights really as well. And, you know, what I always talk about with people that are living in New York City about how rich the space is to play with other people and to hear other music. And I've just recently come back. I've lived in New York my whole life and then returned.
Oh.
And it's just been a spectacular thing to be able to go, like, this sounds like a problem, right? Like, what should I go see tonight? Do you struggle with that a little bit, that there's so much going on all the time in the jazz arena, and where do I go? And plus, you have your own gigs.
And plus, there's so much going on in my head. Well, you know, it's funny. I will say that being an artist in the city is really exciting, and all of it is happening here. But I will say, on a realistic note, you know, I left my day job, night job over the summer. I was working as a sommelier in some really great fine dining restaurants as my side hustle. You know, New York's a tough place to live in. So sometimes the decision's made for you because you have to make a living. So, because of a lot of time having to spend, I think a lot of people that aren't in music can relate, where I was living in Midtown Manhattan and working so hard that I wasn't able to take advantage of the fact that I could walk to Dizzy's Club Coca-Cola and go to see music. So I had to kind of change my life for releasing this record, because I want to take advantage of all those things, and I want to live that fantasy of seeing all the artists that I want to see. So I'm more in that now. So I pick and choose very carefully, and I think living in this city, you have to be very comfortable with, you're always missing something. You can't have fear of missing out, because you just can take for granted you're missing something.
You know, so I'll tell you, I'm an internet skepticist when I'm on the air, right? So, like, I Googled you, and I saw I saw these videos about wine, and I'm like, okay, well, that can't be her. I just kind of dismissed it right out of hand, but it is you, isn't it?
Yeah, that's, you know, a little bit of dissonance, I guess. Yes, I started a little video series called Jazz and Juice, where I was trying to bring in the wine knowledge. So it's still, I think I might move it into a podcast format, but where I'll do a little mini wine lesson and then pair the wine with a jazz artist. So I had Helen Sung, who will be with me at Birdland. I had Helen Sung on the show, and I paired a dry Riesling with her. And so we drank some Riesling and chatted, and then she created a playlist to go with the Riesling. So I'm just trying to weave all these things together.
I think that's fascinating. And I also have to comment, I think that wine goes good with everything, but of course with jazz. And we've had interviews. If I would have known this about you, I would have, like, cracked open a bottle of wine while I was interviewing you. We had someone interview Ian Hunter a couple of years ago, and they drank two bottles of champagne while they were chatting, you know. And I just thought that was kind of like certainly something I could not do. And, you know, by the end of it, I don't know how coherent I would have been, but
Well, that is a problem with giving interviews over wine. I won't do three in a row again for that very reason. I learned from last time, but champagne is one of those few things that I could actually see myself doing that. You know, for some reason, champagne makes me feel more alert and coherent. Probably an illusion. But.
So does are I guess are you saying that Riesling goes with Helen Sung's music, or what was the connection there?
Well, I was thinking of her and her music, and I just thought, okay, you know, actually, I just did an interview with Ted Pankins. They're going to do a little feature in the, I think it's the June issue of Downbeat, where I talk about the indie life feature. So anyway, but I was chatting with him. He has a series of blindfold tests he did with a sommelier and an artist. So the sommelier paired wine with the tune that he blindfolded the artist with, and the artist is drinking the wine at the same time.
Oh, that's fascinating.
The sommeliers paired with the music were just so astute and incredible.
That's amazing. But I mean, so like, give me an example. Like, what would go with what? That's just so interesting.
Oh yeah. So like, Helen was a. I picked a Clemens Busch Trocken Riesling. I picked a really, you know, very mineral, like terroir driven, focused Riesling that has a lot of cut, but also is very versatile with lots of different kinds of food. And I think, you know, Helen, I've seen her play with so many. I haven't had the pleasure of playing with her yet, which I will next week. But she has such versatility, much like you can have Riesling with any kind of food, but also this absolute clear focus and lack of extraneous, you know, I won't say sweetness because it makes her sound like
yeah, no, right?
Because she is. But anyway, there were some of the thoughts that I had as I was pairing the wine.
Yep.
I mean, I paired an orange wine with Matt Wilson just because I wanted something upbeat.
So I love him. I love his music.
Mm-hmm.
I do. And you know, Riesling, by the way, we won't go down this tributary, but it has a reputation for being sweet, but it actually isn't always, is it?
There you go. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, you know, Helen, you think, oh, here's an artist who can, you know, pair well with lots of people and all these other things. But actually, it's like, this is a very serious person. And I feel like Riesling has this reputation for being sweet. I just saw a TV show last night where they were saying they don't want Riesling because it's sweet. I'm like, it's not always sweet.
Good for you.
You know, it's sort of like wine and like music in the sense, I guess that's what I was doing as a sommelier is more like what you're doing as a host in some sense, which is you give people a context to understand what they're about to enjoy.
Yeah,
and I think music can create more transcendence than wine can, but they can do the job even better together.
I would say this about you also in both ways, that, you know, in it's sort of like curating, you know, and thinking through kind of how these tunes go together. Is this the first time that you've played with Helen Sung?
Yeah, the first time I'll play with her will be Tuesday on the 26th at Birdland. We're going to celebrate the release of this record. Jed Patton is on the album, and Cameron Brown is on the album. And, you know, one of the things about this city is that there's so many great musicians, and so they weren't able, they're busy touring. So I have Helen Sung playing piano, and that will be our first musical meeting, and Philip Norris on bass, who's a new person for me to work with. But that is one of the riches of this city, is that you can make music with people who you might not have been working with for years, and I know I'm in great hands. So,
is this your first gig at Birdland, or have you been there before?
My first gig at the Birdland Theater. I debuted my last record in the main space, and I don't know if your listeners might have been there already, but they have this new space downstairs, which is much more conducive for a singer because the Birdland main stage usually is like 3/4. So mm-hmm. In order to address the whole audience, I have to make sure I'm doing it 180 degrees. And at the Birdland Theater, it's much more of a proscenium style. So we get to have a really a more intimate experience. So that'll be really fun.
You know, I love all of the jazz spaces in the city, but I know what you are saying about Birdland upstairs, because if you're mm-hmm. sitting at the bar as a you know, a listener, or if you're sitting in the table areas, it can be awkward depending on where you're sitting. So, you know, I've talked to a bunch of people about this. Patricia Barber was on last week,
and I've seen her.
She's wonderful. And Maria Schneider also pointed this out. You know, sometimes the best place jazz would be more in a theater setting. Right, and so mm-hmm. It's really unfortunate that that's not necessarily the way it's usually set up. Right, it's more of a bar environment.
You know, I'm torn about that because I've performed a lot in the theater setting, and I definitely think there are advantages. You know, if you can have the right kind of lighting and that sort of vantage point on the audience, it can create a lot of drama, which is great. But I also feel really strongly about the intimacy of this art form and mm-hmm. how even in some of the best rooms in the city, there's not that much of a separation between the artist and the audience. So I love that. So I feel like it would be great to get that sort of fusion of things happening at the same time. You know, I love the idea, you know, Duke Ellington talking about jazz being in the concert hall. It's great when jazz is in the concert hall, but I also love to have a martini and a bite while I'm listening.
Amen, sister. Amen, sister.
Yeah, there's kind of a looseness about it too that I wouldn't want to lose. Like, I love those live recordings where it just sounds like this place was on fire and people are just making noise, you know. I love the idea that can happen makes me happy too. So, versatile art form.
I can hear that. I have to say that is something, as a listener who has gone to see thousands of jazz concerts, that people are incredibly rude sometimes. It's like, are you serious? Like, do you know who's up there? You know, like, this is Jesus Christ, Moses, and three of the archangels right in front of you, and you're, you know, quiet. I know what you're saying, but you know, like the famous Bill Evans Sunday at the Village Vanguard, if you listen to that, it's like people are actually having conversations while he's playing. I'm like, what are you thinking? Stop.
I know, but it's like, but you know, if we're too precious with it, if we're too precious with it, then it doesn't get out as much. Although I know for me that if I'm in, it just like, okay, if wine being in the proper glass, if you put, Mouton Rothschild in a Dixie cup, it will not taste the same as if you put it in a proper piece of stemware.
Is that true?
It just won't. I mean, the way the wine aerates and the way it hits your palate, I mean, the wine itself hasn't changed. I don't believe, you know, chemically, but some of the cup may come off on it, but it changes the way you perceive the wine based on how it approaches your palate and your olfactory senses and everything else. So just like with jazz, I know that if I'm in a room where people are paying attention and we get the lights right and the sound is right, then something really magical can happen. And if I'm in the corner of a bar and there's no lighting and the sound is terrible and there's full-on cocktail service going on, it's going to be a little more limited, or I'd be a little more surprised to find out that somebody really got to experience a song in a new way or really, you know, have a experience that like is transcendent, like I've had in clubs where they get all those other ingredients right.
Well, I am looking forward to seeing you at Berlin. So you're there. When is this now? Tell me again.
Tuesday, March 26th.
Fabulous.
It'll be 7 p.m. And we're just doing one set. So it'll be the whole record and maybe then some.
Fabulous.
But yep, Ted Nash will be there, Helen Stump,
wow.
Phil Norris on bass, Jay Sawyer drums, Rogerio Boccato on percussion, Jody Redhage Ferber on cello. So I'm going all out and getting the whole septet on stage. So it's going to be a party.
That sounds fabulous. And tell me what time it starts.
7 p.m. and you can come earlier. They have a nice menu, and I have vetted the wine list. They have a lot more options than they used to. So,
are you serious?
They used to be a little more limited at Birdland, but we've got more options going on there now.
Wow, you bring so many skills to the table. I am in awe.
Let's not do any math equations. And say that I have the skills.
So we're interviewing Kristen Lee Sargent, and she's going to be at Birdland on Tuesday, as she just told you. And we want to thank you so much for your time, and hope that you'll get up to Connecticut. Any gigs planned in this area?
I am working on that right now. I can't wait.
You need to get Side Door Jazz.
Club.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's I'm actually trying to figure out right now how to do. I'm originally from Boston, how to get back to Boston by way of Connecticut. So yes, watch this space. If anybody is listening and curious, I hope to have news on that soon. You can join my mailing list and stay tuned to all the jazz and juice doings and the musical tourings. My idea is that I'll be, you know, omnipresent. It will be hard to miss me, I hope, very soon.
I love it. Okay, well, thank you so much. And do let us know if you're going to be at Side Door, and I'll see you at Birdland next Tuesday.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lisa, and thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you so much. And so we are listener-supported radio, WPKN in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and we're going to head on over to Betty Carter.
spring is here has got me feeling like a horse that never left the pole.
My condition.